This is the July 31 edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. A busy day and a busy week. Futures finished the corn down about 4.5 cents. Soybeans off a penny and a quarter and wheat 24 lower. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. It's been an awfully busy week. Mike, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Todd. It has. It has been a real rock and roll roller coaster this week.
It's been a tough week, actually. Soybeans had a tough week. Wheat on Friday had a really rough day. Can you tell me about those two things?
Well, I think, you know, this goes back to maybe what we talked about a couple weeks ago when we last spoke. And this is where the tariffs and the trade and the sanctions have kind of reared their ugly head in the market, in my opinion. And I'm not worried about the price action as we closed out the month of July, because I do think a lot of this was book shutting and profit taking for asset allocators and performance allocators. The one thing that bothered me this week is something that we've talked about also several times in the past few months, and that is the bond yields and the debt load that we're carrying. And my biggest concern as we closed out Friday's trade was that the 10-year yield did take a new shot at a new 2026 high and made that new 2026 high, and now is only about a tenth of a point of away from the 2025 high and only about a quarter point away from the 2024 high, which was the highest since 2007. And so to kind of revisit that issue fundamentally, if we see the bond yields go up because of debt loads and fearful, and I think this week it was due to the GDP losses, if we see that happen, it's probably going to institute and instigate the dollar firmness. And more importantly, it'll probably take money and potential rotation out of the stock market into commodities, because that's what we started to see in the beginning of July. And especially after that end of June stocks and acreage report, we started to see some real moving and shaking by the asset managers back into commodities, and obviously El Nino was part of that. So the conditions in Russia and Ukraine are worse than ever. The conditions in the Middle East are the worst since we started the conflict back last February. I looked at some of the shipping data on Thursday, and I think we had 6 or 9 ships that went through the Strait of Hormuz, and before the conflict, it was an average of 110 per day. And so we haven't seen any changes on that. In fact, the French government came out and rated their corn crop at the worst since 2011 at 34% good to excellent. So when you and I talked about a 2012 type drought in France, that's for real. And it's there in the numbers now. So nothing's really changed when it comes to the supply demand fundamentals, if you ask me, except we're very high priced in the wheat. We're relatively high priced in the beans, but we're still very, very economic and very, very competitive in the corn market.
Okay, so try to put some of this together. First, put together the higher bond yield and then the money flow. If it's coming into the marketplace, into commodities, I suppose it doesn't have to come in on the buy side. It could come in on the sell side. And do we see that, or is that what you're expecting? And mostly I'm just asking the question is, when it comes in, which direction does the market go?
Yeah, and this is the $64,000 question. What I wanted to see, because of the global El Nino and the still very strong demand and the shrinking supplies, and this is still the missing link to me, Todd, to kind of get to the answer to your question, is the trade still thinks we have ample supplies because they see demand going down right now. And they've been going back and forth like a teeter-totter on that. They push premium into the crude, and then they pull it right back out again. President Trump's going to Camp David, we think, this week, the weekend, to talk about how he can expand the military conflict with Iran and get a relatively quick victory. If I were a fund manager and I were in the equities markets, I'd be like, you know what? I think I'm overweight stocks and I want to get back into some commodities here because of geopolitics. And we just saw another oil refinery blown up in the Kerch Strait by the Russians and against the Ukrainians. And we've seen grain terminals hit this week. So to me, the rotation mindset should be there. But I think with the higher bond yields and especially these sanctions and the tariffs and China and the U.S. kind of throwing spitballs at each other again a little bit through their diplomats, I think the trade is saying we're going to pull some money out of both the stock market and the commodities and just sit back and wait.
Oh, so they're going to set to the sideline. That would mean less volatility and a dropping market, do you think, into?
Well, it would probably mean a little bit more volatility as measured by the VIX. I mean, that's probably something that you and I will be talking about the month of August, is what's the VIX doing, the volatility, the true volatility measurement of at the money options in the S&P 500, and whether that's spiking above 20. And if it would go above 25, that would probably instigate, and historically can instigate a much bigger liquidation in the equities. And what would that circumstance be? Would it be the sharply rallying bond market yields and dollar? And if that's the case, then maybe the commodities don't get any of the purchasing and the rotation like we want them to get. But I guess if you look at the pure supply demand fundamentals at this stage of the game, even with this trade sanctions and tariffs, I don't think we should be pulling money out of the commodities right now. That should be done closer to the fourth quarter. Why? Because we still have a lot of weather to go through, and US, European, Ukrainian, Australian, and Southeast Asian.
What impact does the Federal Reserve taking making no move with interest rates this week have?
Yeah, probably the biggest disappointment Friday, because it dovetails with what we've talked about. When I saw our weakening GDP number, I thought this was on Wednesday, or yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Wednesday the Fed came out and said, no, I guess it's Wednesday the Fed came out and said no change. Thursday morning GDP came out much weaker at 1.5% for the second quarter. I thought, okay, this makes a lot of sense. The Fed doesn't need to raise rates because they're worried about the demand. That should give the market more confidence that we don't need to see two or three rate hikes by the end of this year. And so the trade's not buying into that though. And that's why that new 2026 high in the 10-year yield really did disturb me more than anything else out there.
Farmers are probably worried after last week, looking at, new contract highs in soybeans, and then the fall this week, both in soybeans and wheat. Anything that they should be doing as they work their way into the month of August? Now, this is an interesting month because sometimes lows are set early and then we start to move higher, or things just begin to really fall out of bed.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And obviously within a minute and a half or 2 minutes, it would be very wise, I think, for anybody that hasn't taken a trial to get a 4-week free trial on globalcomresearch.com to get a better answer out of this, because my model years are still 2010, 2011, and we talked about that a few weeks ago. And that was a rally into the August WASDE report. If we can't pick that back up again next week, that will very much concern me. As would, if we don't pick that rally back up, we're going to eat into some pretty key technical levels and profitable levels, especially for soybeans, and to a lesser degree, new crop wheat. And that would make me want to probably get some recommendations on paper in place or get some catch-up sales made for people that have been dragging their feet on physical soybean sales. But I did make my first 2027 sale in the wheat this week, as we hit some price targets that I was hoping we'd get to.
In August, USDA will release that crop production number. It is on the 12th. It is as of tomorrow, Saturday, the first day of August. What do you suppose it might show for yield, and will they change acreage?
I think they could show a lower corn yield, and I've been surprised the last 6 or 7 days that I've talked to clients in Illinois and Indiana and Kentucky, east of the Mississippi River, about how their beans look very, very good, but they have lost some potential in their corn crop, and that matches up with the conditions report. Illinois has not been above 60% good to excellent since mid-June. Five of the top 7 states by acreage number have a lower good to excellent number than they did last year at this time. So 183 is, to me, a tough sell right now, given the weather pattern we've had. And it looks like the Western Corn Belt is going to turn back off hot and dry. So I could see the USDA cutting yield back, but what do they do with the demand? That's the big question. The big issue is, are we closer to a 1.5 carryover? That's what I'll be looking at.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Susilo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Thank you again for being with us this week. We appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet.
Let's begin as we close out this month. on this last day of July by looking back at the weather forecasts that were in place as we moved through July. I wonder how well, because the models seem to have been a bit all over the place, they really did at picking up what the weather was going to be and what actually happened.
You know, Todd, whenever I get to this point, I look back on a forecast, I have to remember something. Okay, the models, they're the tool that we use, but they're not the end-all be-all. It's our interpretation of them. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I interpreted things very well at the end of the end of June predicting July. My comments to you were, hey, we're going to have some heat in July, but I don't think it's going to be very long in duration. And I figured we'd have these cooler interludes. And if you just take that sentence as a blanket sentence, yeah, I got that right. But I don't think I was able to capture the magnitude of the heat when it did come through. What I mean by that is you take a look at the western side of the state, getting over to northern Missouri, then Iowa, then especially into parts of the Dakotas and over to Nebraska, and July pushed them past 140 stress degree days. I mean, that's a critical threshold where we start to lose yield. Now, in Illinois, our heat came in bursts. It got really hot when it did get hot. Our overnight lows were very high, but we got dew out of them most mornings. And so, I don't know. I gave myself a letter grade this morning. Man, I was a professor for a while. And I was like, C minus D plus. I'm not really happy with what I did, Todd. And it's going to go on my transcript, and I'm going to have to work hard next semester to bring those grades back up. But, I wasn't sold on just the heat. The question is, did the crop do well with it? And we saw some recent crop ratings come out, and of course they dropped. And as a result, we saw, the national yield numbers come down. I will say this about July. What is being underreported is the massive heat wave in Europe, in my opinion. I don't think we fully understand what that's going to do in terms of global supply and demand. And I also think that there was a strong signal of just an absolutely, bombshell energetic jet stream that ran across parts of the South Pacific slamming into Chile. And that might be an indicator for this upcoming spring for them that I think we should talk about here in a few minutes. But yes, I give myself, I don't know. I'll be generous. I'll get a C minus. At least I passed, I guess.
Have you been able to do any ground truthing? I mean, actually been on the ground and...
Yeah, I have. And I talked to a bunch of growers this week in up in North Dakota in the Red River Valley. And what I was able to see from driving around up there and then talking with farmers... I mean, by the way, I got into Fargo on Tuesday and it was over 100 degrees at 6 p.m. in the evening. And nighttime temperatures didn't really cool off that much. And yeah, they got a little cooler weather now, but it was pretty rough. So when you look at the kind of a national yield map, eastern Iowa through most of Illinois to Indiana looks really good. The I states are doing all right. Western Iowa, the Dakotas, Nebraska, we've got holes that need filled in. Now, the rain that came through recently is going to help parts of Nebraska. It's certainly helping Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin. And yeah, it got rain today, but that rain did not get to the Red River Valley of the North. And as a result, I think that that's going to be a spot where we continue to see major yield losses for both corn and soybeans, because the crop looks green from the road, but it is in trouble when you get up and look at it close, Todd. So I'm very concerned about what's going on there.
Let's talk more about the rainfall. It is in the forecast for this weekend.
Yeah.
How much and where do you suppose?
Well, I've already watched it move through parts of Iowa and Minnesota and out of a section of South Dakota. And you know what? Sioux Falls got a tenth of an inch, but there's better rain that has come farther to the east. And we're going to get a couple of rounds midday today, and then watch the low curl up over us late today into tomorrow. And what that's going to do is two things. One, it's going to prolong the time period under which we see the cooler weather, the cloud cover, and the rain. And two, Todd, I want to talk to Andrew Pritchard about this. This is more his specialty, but I think we might have a few of those, what we call cold air funnels. Now, nothing alarming. Don't have to worry about it, but it's just the right makeup to possibly get little funnel clouds to zip out of the clouds. They don't usually touch the ground. And if they do, they're very weak, but I think we could see that. But it's a 30-hour event coming through, and we've got the cooler weather behind it as well. So I like this start to August. I just wish I wish you and I were on the phone call talking about the same things, and it was July 16th, not August or July 31st, August 1st.
Anything else in the United States before we look elsewhere, or do you want to look into the month of August?
I would say this, looking at the Western Corn Belt and Western Plains, there is a lot of risk going forward that they stay hot. I don't think that that's going to be the case for us. I think we have a better chance at having what I would just call more routine temperatures in August, less risk on the really hot side. But I'd be watching the Western Corn Belt carefully. They've already taken a hit, and I think we need to think about what that's going to look like come harvest.
On the global stage, what are you watching?
I think the biggest thing is going to be South America. Outside of the Europe story, I think South America is going to be a very, very important September, October, November forecast. We're predicting very wet south, very dry north. And there is some historical precedent that when that pattern sets up, they tend to be 2 to 3 weeks behind in planting. And if that comes into fruition this year and we see those planting progress numbers stalling, that's a positive for U.S. markets. So I want to watch that carefully. And then the big thing is this El Nino is absolutely tearing through, and it is expected now to be not just historic, but push the numbers quite high, making it unprecedented, but also making it one of the strongest events we've ever seen, which will also influence our harvest. I think we might have tighter harvest windows this year.
Yeah, wet here, wet in parts of South America, Argentina, and southern Brazil, and then drier in Mato Grosso?
Drier in Mato Grosso, and that is the combination. That slows them down because they're waiting on rain north, they're trying to get rid of rain across the south, and it's going to be flip-flop this year. I think the precipitation pattern could be problematic for them in South America.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. You may hear him again by visiting our website at willag.org, willag.org, or by searching out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications by name, places like, Spotify, as well as Apple and YouTube and so many more. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week programming coming up next. Otherwise, you'll hear a portion of it, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Again, it too is up online at willag.org.